This is Dubai Eye 103.8.
Got Dr. Katrin Yar, General Manager, Owner and Head Vet at the German Veterinary Clinic with us until 5 o'clock. Good afternoon, Dr. Katrin. How are you?
I'm very well. Good afternoon.
Can I just ask, how long have you been in the region and treating animals?
13 years this year.
And how... Have there been any unusual animals during that time?
Oh, yes.
Any surprises? Really?
I would say probably the most unusual animal that I've ever treated has been a wallaby over here.
That is unexpected.
I know. And that was in a practice I was working when I first moved here. And I just went into the waiting room and there was a wallaby sitting in the waiting room.
Did you at least have the knowledge to go, that's a wallaby?
Well, yeah, I kind of knew it was a wallaby, but that's where it ended.
But day to day tends to be your more cats and dogs.
Cats and dogs, indeed, for us. Yeah,
lots of questions already in the mix. It's always a busy show, so the sooner you can send in your question, the better. We're talking about older animals later, a topic very close to my heart. I'm going to try very hard not to cry.
No.
But of course, all questions are welcome this hour. 4001 or use the Dubai Eye app. And everyone who gets in touch and asks an animal-related question goes into that draw to win a two-month supply of Royal Canin pet food. Where do you feel like your kind of areas of specialism and special interest lie, Dr. Katrin?
Well, being a cat-friendly clinic, feline medicine, so all things cat are definitely one thing. And then my other two big passions are, one is anaesthesia. So I actually did a certificate in anaesthesia when I was in the UK. And to this day, I still absolutely love anaesthesia. And I will, happily anaesthetise all of our patients.
Good
and,
to know.
Yeah. And the other area is behaviour, veterinary behaviour medicine. So I think that's, for me, is a huge up-and-coming area in the veterinary world. And we don't practice it enough. So that's a big passion.
So that when you say that, do you mean people not necessarily treating the root cause of a behavioural problem?
I think as a profession, as vets, we don't always give enough emphasis to the behavioural. So the mental and emotional well-being of our pets, I think we're very quick to treat the physical, but often the mental and emotional can cause the physical, or they play very much hand in hand. And it's a little bit, I guess it's, you know, the same as sort of mental health was in people a few years ago or many years ago. There's just a bit of not enough knowledge about it and
not
a bit of
awareness.
Stigma about it, yeah.
Speaking of behavioural issues, Kim has been in touch saying, we recently adopted a 2 to 3 year old lab mix from our shelter. He shows signs of abuse such as fear peeing when severely stressed, hiding at the bottom of the stairs, doesn't play or accept treats. He doesn't bark, which leads me to believe perhaps he was shock collar trained or beaten. And he's extremely hesitant to leave the living room to explore. He's not aggressive. He's the opposite, submissive to a worrying point, like he's scared. I'd love advice on helping him adjust. Oh, Kim.
Oh, yeah.
Poor guy.
It breaks your heart, doesn't it, to hear that? Lovely question, Kim. And there are definitely lots of things that we can do to help. So as I just mentioned, part of the whole sort of veterinary behaviour medicine, we do actually use medications to help pets with fear and anxiety and stress. So that would be, you know, one point of approach. But lots and lots of time, love, empathy, lots of hugs and kisses, you know, if the dog is happy to accept those. But really just being led by the dog, I would say, you know, really watching him and seeing what he's comfortable with. And then over time, those behaviours will start to disappear with enough good and positive experiences. But I would definitely recommend some kind of medication just to help him over, you know, these initial sort of times of anxiety. And I'd be very, very happy to help and to chat to Kim about this further.
All right, Kim, there you go. And from dogs to cats, Gordon, this sounds really annoying. Gordon's message in on 4001 saying, the cat keeps meowing at nothing in the bathroom and near the front door. How do I make it stop? 8 months old now, has never done it until Friday night. And now she's waking up me and the wife in the nights by constantly half meowing, half moaning. We've tried to ignore her when she does it. She's now starting to meow and moan even louder. I just went to go and tell her off and she just starts rolling on the floor and purring. Manipulative little character. It's driving me nuts. She'll do it for most of the night and even in the morning. She's a house cat, doesn't go out, never peed anywhere, but in a litter tray until yesterday when she did it on the bathroom rug. She hasn't been neutered yet. Could it be linked? I just want to know a way to stop her from walking off and meowing throughout the house at night. What's the best way to punish her for it, if at all? So any advice for Gordon and his noisy cat?
Yeah, there's a couple of clues in the question there, Gordon. So my first point would be to definitely go and get her neutered. So this sounds like typical in-season behaviour.
Ah, so she's 8 months old.
Yes.
Now would be a good time for neutering?
Yeah, I mean, you can neuter cats even earlier than that. So this behaviour in cats can start from 5 months of age. And the fact that she rolls on the floor and purrs is yet another indicator that she's in heat. So that's the reason for it. Punishing won't work, I think, as you found out. And punishment should never really be a way to try and interact with our pets. So off to the vets, I feel.
There you go.
I'm sure that will resolve your problem.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thanks for that, Gordon. Wishing you all the best. Priyanka has been in touch via the app saying, my 7-month-old cockapoo has rough paws. I'm not sure if it's normal for them to feel rough and they don't really look like anything is wrong with them. Should I put something on them?
Yeah, good question. I think sometimes in this particular environment, we can get rough pads. So walking a lot on hot pavements, hot concrete, sand, the paws can get a little bit rough. However, the actual sort of skin, if you like, the thick skin on the paws is rough by nature because it protects the feet. You can put things like a little bit of Vaseline or some aloe vera gel, something like that on there. But you shouldn't really need to unless you're concerned. Doesn't sound like there's anything particularly
wrong. Yeah, it doesn't sound like there's cracks or bleeding or anything like that. It's just a bit rough.
Bit rough, yeah.
All right, hope that helps, Priyanka.
The Animal Challenge on Pets and Vets.
That's right, and we're putting that challenge to Dr. Katrin Yarn this afternoon to answer as many questions as possible between now and 5 o'clock. Dr. Katrin is the General Manager, the owner and head vet at the German Veterinary Clinic. Lots of questions coming in for you, Dr. Katrin, on 4001, or you can use the Dubai Eye app. We're going to get through as many as we can. We've got one here from Aziza saying, my two shepherds, Swiss and Belgian, are scratching non-stop. They have no ticks. It seems they have really dry skin. Apart from the really expensive salmon oil, what can I do to help them?
Yeah, this is a great question because I think this is something that is really common in the UAE. We do see a lot of itchy dogs. It may be as simple as sand, dust, debris, environmental factors getting into those thick coats. So regular shampooing can help. However, it can be as complex as allergies, and they can be either dietary allergies or, again, environmental allergies. So I would definitely say, you know, perhaps start with regular baths. And if they've got dry skin, use a moisturizing shampoo or a very mild shampoo, such as a baby shampoo. And if there's no improvement, then I think it would be a trip to the vets, I'm afraid.
Okay. And you feel like those breeds are particularly kind of susceptible because of that big, thick coat?
That thick coat. I think they're definitely more susceptible, yeah.
Aziza, send in the names. We love it when we get a pet name. Tell us the name of your pet on these messages. And of course, everyone who sends in a question or a comment between 4 and 5 this afternoon goes into the draw to win a 2-month supply of Royal Canin pet food. Question here about vaccinations. We've got a message here saying, my pup had his first vaccine at 8 weeks. Since we've had him, he's had issues with diarrhea and we've been working with the vets to correct this. He's now 12 weeks and the 4-week period after the first vaccine has passed. I was told because of this, he'd no longer be protected by his first vaccine, that he'd need to have the first one again, which is fine. However, this does mess with his socialization period. Now I've had him to meet my friend's dogs before. I'm worried this could be a bad issue now the first vaccine has worn off. The question is it a bad idea or will it be fine knowing my friend's dogs are up to date with their boosters?
Oh, this is such a great question because this is the ongoing sort of dilemma between vaccinating and socialising them. So I guess the first thing to say is that a dog's sort of golden period for socialisation is age 3 to 12 weeks. So that time period is the time where the puppies are going to learn the most and make the most positive associations if they experience things positively. So, of course, you know, you're right to be concerned about that. So, yes, it's true that if the first vaccine has lapsed, then you do need to restart the vaccination course. It's possible that the puppy might have some immunity from the first vaccine, even though it has lapsed. It won't be complete immunity. I would say if you have a safe space, so that would probably be an indoor environment where only known dogs have been able to go, such as somebody's house, and you have other dogs that are fully vaccinated and healthy, then that would probably be a situation that I think could be a compromise. I definitely would not go walking outside. And, you know, I wouldn't let the puppy mix with dogs that you don't know are fully vaccinated. But in a safe space, inside, in somebody's home, with dogs that are fully vaccinated and healthy, yes, that's a compromise. I would probably take that.
Go. Great advice. Hope that helps there. And Fran has been in touch saying, can I leave my cat for 4 days and 3 nights if someone comes in every day to play with her for an hour and to feed her? She's 9 months old.
Okay. Good question. I would probably say yes, that should be fine, as long as you make sure that the cat has everything she needs. And that's not only food and water, but also some environmental enrichment so that she can get up on scratch posts and scratch, and she has plenty of toys around. I think it's fine if someone comes in to play with her, as long as she's accepting of that person that comes in. She needs to have her litter tray cleaned out regularly. And obviously that person needs to make sure she's okay and, you know, check that there's no diarrhea or anything like that in the litter tray. But yeah, I think 4 days and three nights is acceptable.
With a trusted person.
Yes,
hope
absolutely.
That helps, Fran. Have a great time wherever you're going. Aziz has got back in touch saying, thanks, Helen, Dr. Katrin. My two doggies are called Snow and Ash. We'll do shampoo and conditioner, and it's right, perhaps the sandstorm is not helpful. Thank you again. And Rami's been in touch, a previous winner, saying, wanted to say thank you for the 2 month supply of food last month. Twix has lost a couple of kilos by limiting his food. Good
great.
To hear.
Very
with a name Twix. Poor
Twix.
Things. Not a winner on the weight front. But Rami, that's really great to hear.
Animal News on Pets and Vets.
Taking your questions this afternoon on all things animal. It's 4001 on the SMS, or you can message us for free using the Dubai Eye app, or give us a call 0487155500. We are, of course, across social media too, at Dubai Eye 1038 FM. Joined by Dr. Katrin Yarn here. She's the general manager, the owner, and the head vet at the German Veterinary Clinic. Some great questions coming in for you, and everyone, of course, who gets in touch during Pets and Vets goes into the draw to win that 2 month supply of Royal Canin pet food. No name on this one, Dr. Katrin. I'm really interested to get your thoughts on this, and equally anyone who has any comments as well, please do get in touch or any suggestions. Saying, we thought long and hard before we got a puppy. What would be the best breed for us, how long we will look after it during the day, etc. And it really hasn't worked out as we hoped. What we didn't realise was that we would get a puppy who chews everything, even now at 10 months old. He's mainly confined to the kitchen, and one of us has to watch him all the time. The chewing means he has to be in his crate from 8:30 in the morning till 3:30 in the afternoon, 4 days a week, although I can come home at lunchtime and walk him for half an hour when the weather suits, but it's still not ideal. What we very, very foolishly didn't consider would be what we would do if he wanted to go somewhere for more than 3.5 hours. Our lives are not quite as dog friendly as we thought they would be, and we just have to accept that if we want to go somewhere, we pay for doggy daycare. Expensive, but manageable. I suppose I'm just fed up that our entire lives seem to revolve around him. Do I just accept that it's this way that I will feel for the next 12 years? He really is a beautiful boy and does get a lot of attention and affection, so he's not neglected apart from the crate thing, I promise.
Oh, puppies. Yeah, I think we often underestimate how much hard work puppies are. It is essentially like having a toddler, you know, for quite a long time. It really is.
And it's stressful. It's really stressful.
It's very stressful.
And the chewing thing, I completely sympathise because ours got through countless shoes, sunglasses, Kindle.
Yep.
I mean, all of it. Could not be left unsupervised. Would, you know, pause up onto tables to pull anything off and just go to town on. And we still get chewing now with the kids' toys and things like that.
Yeah.
And it is stressful.
Yeah, absolutely. It's 100% stressful. And, you know, and it sounds like you've definitely done everything right. You know, you've thought a lot about it, thought about the breed. I mean, that's a great start. But still, we underestimate puppies. And unfortunately, chewing is something that puppies do. That's normal behaviour for them. It's, you know, perhaps behaviour that we don't appreciate a lot, but it's normal behaviour for them. I mean, I think a number of things. Number one would be environmental management. So the things that are dangerous for the puppy to chew on, or the things that you really don't want to have chewed. I'm working with a client at the moment where the puppies have chewed two sets of expensive headphones and lots and lots of flip-flops. So I think, you know, just managing the environment so that the puppy physically cannot get hold of those items. So locking them away in cupboards. I know it's, you know, it's not great, but it won't be forever. But
and
at the
really
moment,
it really isn't. I say about them, you know, chewing the occasional toy, it's nothing as anywhere near as bad as it used to be.
Exactly. It won't be forever.
It's like kids. Everything's a stage.
Exactly.
And you will come through the other side of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And 10 months is, depending on the breed of the dog, is you know, still pretty young. So I would say, you know, until they're sort of 18 months, 2 years old, you're still going to get quite a lot of puppy behaviours. I think something that would possibly hugely help this puppy is to have some really great positive reinforcement training. So something to occupy his mind, to mentally stimulate him. So we say that clicker training, for example, 20 minutes of clicker training is as good as an hour's walking, because they really have to use their brains. They have to learn new things. They have to figure things out. They have to focus on the owners. And it's very relationship bonding. So probably at the moment, your puppy's maybe not your best friend. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, doing some really great training will really create and strengthen that bond and also occupy his mind for some part of the day and hopefully tire him out. I think daycare is a good solution as long as you find a daycare that really suits your dog. You know, a daycare where your dog doesn't kind of feel bullied by other dogs, but where he can play with lots of same age, you know, equally as energetic puppies and have a really good time doing that. The crate training, look, at the moment, I wouldn't worry too much. I think you've got to do what you've got to do to try and get through it. Make the crate a really, really positive place. So, you know, feed treats. Another really good thing are stuffed chew toys. So the one that we use a lot in our clinic are Kong toys. So they're red rubber toys that have a hollow center that you can stuff with all kinds of goodies. That can be wet food, biscuits.
And again, just keep that brain occupied.
Exactly. And licking and chewing is very calming. So having that chew toy there. So when you do go out for a longer period of time, pop him in his crate, give him the chew toy, and that will occupy him for some time. And always have a Kong toy made up in the fridge ready to go.
But yeah, well done for reaching out and acknowledging really. It's not always easy.
No, it's not. And you know, 10 months is that typical sort of teenage phase, and they're not easy to deal with. Yeah.
Wishing you all the best there, I really, really am. Dr. Katrin here is with us until 5 o'clock this afternoon, taking your questions and comments. And our special topic this week is geriatric animals. So what do you define as being a kind of a senior pet?
Well, this is an interesting one. This is actually a topic that's also very close to my heart. So senior pets or mature animals can be from the age of 7 or 8 years old in our dogs and cats. So younger than a lot of people think. I think a lot of people think as, you know, older pets as being in their teenage years. But actually, no, it's when they hit that 7, 8 year old mark, that's when we start to class them as senior. And that's really when we start to think about their healthcare needs in a slightly different way.
So what can we think about in terms of life expectancy of cats and dogs?
So I have had a little look, and the Guinness Book of Records says that the oldest cat was 38 years old.
What?
A cat called Cream Puff.
38?
I know, 38. And the oldest dog was 29.
Wow. Now, that's not normal.
I know.
Hence that's, being in the record books.
That's definitely not normal. So I would say cats probably late teens. And this is obviously always presuming that they're healthy and they haven't got any chronic illnesses, because that will shorten their lifespan. And dogs very much depends on the breed and the size of the dog. So larger breed dogs, especially dogs such as Great Danes, have a much shorter life expectancy. So you're looking at maybe between 5 and 8 years for those large breed dogs. And then the smaller breed dogs up to 15, I would say. Yeah.
And what kind of common issues can animals face as they age, Dr. Katrin?
Very similar to what we face as we age. So a lot of animals do develop osteoarthritis in old age. And I think this is something that we need to be really wary of, because it's a chronic pain that they live with that really needs to be managed. So there are lots and lots of things we can do for osteoarthritis. And that's a good idea to speak to your vet. But also they may need a change in diet. They might need a diet that's more age appropriate. Dental disease. I mean, dental disease is a lifelong disease. But again, as pets get older, that might be something that might become more common. And then the diseases that we associate with pets getting older, such as kidney failure, perhaps thyroid disease, liver disease, things like that. So we actually recommend, we have a package at our clinic called the Senior Health Profile. And it's a very comprehensive test. It has lots of blood tests, urine tests. We do blood pressure measurements and full physical examination. And we recommend that, I would say, every year for our older pets. And it is amazing the things that we've picked up in the Senior Health Profile that we've then been able to address and probably extend that pet's lifespan by 2, 3, 4 years, because we've addressed things early.
The Animal Challenge on Pets and Vets.
Are you up for a challenge, Dr. Katrin? Get through as many questions as we can in the next few minutes.
Always, yep.
Nitin has been in touch saying, thinking about doing a DNA test on our mixed breed rescue. Is it worth the money and what are the benefits?
This is a good question. So DNA tests are very fashionable at the moment.
And in people and in pets.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, I do think they have their place. Having used quite a few of them in our clinic, and I've actually tested both my dogs myself.
Have you?
Yeah. And originally we did the test because we wanted to know what breeds they were, because they're both rescue dogs and both sort of cross breeds, you know, typical Heinz 57 specials. And I have to say, I was a little bit disappointed in the information about the breeds that came out. We weren't able to get 100% of their kind of breed traits or what breeds were in them. However, The thing that I find hugely beneficial about the DNA test that we use is that you can actually look for genetic diseases and hereditary diseases, as well as some hereditary sensitivities to some types of medication. So you can test for whether your dog is particularly sensitive to particular types of anesthetics. And obviously that's great information to have and is really about the safety of the pet and the pet's health.
Okay, there you go, Nitin. I'm very intrigued what they are, so let us know. And Stu, last question, saying this time last year, Kat started vomiting furballs, so we switched to a dry food switched from dry food to a furball control one, which was eaten happily. The bag lasted about 3 months. Since then, we stuck the same brand but different flavours, new flavour every 3 months, all eaten with gusto. Now, as spring is in the air, we thought we'd have a furball one again, and she won't touch it. We've tried sprinkling some from another flavour on Trot. She ate those enthusiastically, but still left the rest. Wife's cunning plan is to feed the one she likes and mix in more and more of the other one each day. Is it going to work? Picky cats.
Yeah, this is a good question. Is it going to work? I haven't got that answer for you, I'm afraid. So one thing I'd say is that cats don't have a lot of taste buds. So cats have a lot fewer taste buds than people do. And they don't really discriminate against flavors. So a lot of them aren't that fussy, whether it's chicken or fish or any other kind of flavor, in inverted commas. Cats really like to eat what they're used to. So I think if she's been used to that brand in the past and she stopped eating it, that's a little bit unusual. And another flavour on top, yeah, if she's liking those, then I would potentially stick with those. It's a difficult one. As long as she's eating something, I think that's fine. And as long as she's eating a furball diet, I think that's fine.
Okay, good to know. Dr. Katrin from German Veterinary Clinic, thank you so
thank
much.
You.
We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.